So, first of all, happy Valentine's Day. Second, no homework meeting this evening because I will be on a flight to Vienna. And no new homework for the holiday, for the break. Enjoy the break. And if you want to see what I will be talking about, go to my website, Talks Vienna 1402, and you will find that what I'm going to talk about is essentially the three classes that we're going through, except one dimension up, so in four dimensions. Where it's a different quantum field theory, different invariants, but basically the same overall story. And, you know, maybe with little luck, we will end up talking, saying something about it at the very end, I don't know. But in four dimensions, certain things become a lot simpler, surprisingly. But unfortunately, certain other things, I wouldn't say they're more... Well, okay, certain other things definitely become more complicated. And furthermore, it's been looked at much more lightly. So many things are unknown, but they don't deserve to be unknown. They deserve to be known, okay? And just people haven't looked at them enough. Anyway, that's Vienna. Today, I'm going to quickly finish the gauge fixing business, and then I hope to talk about Feynman diagrams. So let's quickly finish gauge fixing business. So remember that we're looking for path integrals in which the quadratic is a wedge dA, and the quadratic part, and also the remainder of the integral, is invariant under taking a and replacing it by a plus df. So really we're integrating something that is, on an infinite dimensional space, something that is invariant under infinite dimensional orbits. And then we're going to have difficulty with Gaussian, with Gaussian in integration. And the idea is to first try to find a section. So instead of integrating over everything, we actually not quite even find a section. The idea is take the integrand multiplied by the delta function at this section, and then hopefully it will become easier. We will see that it will. Okay? So the section we choose is, within each orbit, we choose the one form A for which the L2 norm of A is minimal. And last time, I derived that this is the same as saying that D star of A should be zero, where D star is the adjoint of D. Okay? So I want to very, very quickly remind you what the adjoint of D is. Okay? This is going to be quick. So you know there is this usual Deram complex. Omega 0 goes to omega 1, goes to omega 2, goes to omega 3, goes to 0. And there is the Deram, we're in R3, so it stops at 3. There is the Deram differential going from each one to the next. This one is just functions. This one is vector fields. Once you choose a coordinate, once you choose a basis, this becomes just vector fields, right? Because these are triples, a one form is a triple of functions, right? F1 times dx1 plus f2 times dx2 and so on. And a triple of functions is also a vector field. So again, only after you've chosen a basis, okay?
You mean you've chosen a Riemannian metric?
Well, chosen, in fact, I'm even choosing coordinates. I'm just thinking of it as R3 of three specific variables, x1, x2, x3. Likewise, omega 2 is again vector fields because there are three generators, dx1 wedge dx2, dx2 wedge dx3, and dx3 wedge dx1. So there are three coefficients, so it's vector fields. And this is, once again, functions. And then with this identification, this map D is what differential or sort of multivariable calculus people will call grad. This is what people will call curl, and this is what people will call div. Okay, and furthermore, there is an identification of this with this, and this is the so-called star operator. And likewise, you can identify this with this, and this is, well, another piece of the same star operator. Okay? Now, the adjoint of grad is div. Okay? So, in other words, if you want to take a formula from physics, if you want to take the gradient of a, not from physics, from calculus, sorry, from three-dimensional calculus, if you want to take the grad of f and take its inner product with some vector field v, then this is the same as maybe it's minus, the inner product of f with the divergence of v. Okay? Proof, well, this is just sum dIf times, right, the gradient of f is the sum of the derivatives of f, times vi. Vi is a vector field, so it has three components, well integrated. And by integration by parts, this is negative, you move the derivative to the other side, so the sum of f times di vi, and this is the divergence. As yes. Okay? So, end of proof. Okay? Now, therefore, a different way to write d star of a is equal to zero is to say that if you take the star of a is a one form, the star of a is a two form, then you take d of that, the result is equal, well, and then you take star again, the result is equal to zero. Okay? But you don't need the last star, it doesn't do anything. Okay? It's the last star is just an isomorphism. So a different way of saying d star of a is equal to zero, I mean d adjoint of a is equal to zero, is to say that d of the star of a is equal to zero. Okay? So, okay, that's a first comment. And second comment is, how do you implement delta functions? Okay, so how do I do delta functions? So here is a formula from non-rigorous Fourier analysis. So everything I will do will be a bit non-rigorous, and the test is at the end, whether it gets correct formulas. Okay, so what's the delta function of x? So, you know, this is the function which is supposed to be zero at everywhere except at zero, and at zero it's infinity. And the overall integral is 1. Okay? So, well, I don't know what it is, but I know what the Fourier transform of this is. Well, I mean, the Fourier transform of this is you take delta of x and you integrate it against e to the minus I xy dy. Right? That's the Fourier transform. But by definition, integrating, dx, this is the Fourier transform at y. By definition, the integrating something times the delta function just gives you the value of that thing at zero. But the value of this at zero is zero. Sorry, is one, constant. So the Fourier transform of delta of x, so this is the Fourier transform of delta of x, evaluated at y, and it's constant y. It's the constant y. So therefore, delta of x is the inverse Fourier transform of 1. What's the inverse Fourier transform of 1? And I'm dropping the pi factors. There should be some pi factors, which I'm dropping. So what's the inverse Fourier transform of y? Of 1? Well, you take the function 1, and you multiply it by e to the ixy, without the minus this time, not that it matters much, and you integrate dy. So hence, delta of x is this. Alternatively, you can think about it this way. If x is equal to 0, this function here is the constant 1, so we're integrating the constant 1 from on the whole real numbers, we get infinity. If x is not equal to 0, this is an oscillating function, so all the oscillations cancel, so we get the integral is equal to 0. Okay? It's formal. It's not rigorous. It's not true in any honest sense. But, again, things, the proof of things is by whether they work. Okay? So, in other words, if I want to put into this integrand a delta function at the section, right, I need to put a delta function at d star of a, okay? And how will I do that? Well, d star of a is a zero form. Right? So I need something, I need a conjugate variable. I need something that will pair with it. What will pair with it will be a three form. So I will replace this by the integral over the space of all three forms on R3. Three forms are just functions, right? With you know. And the three form I will call phi. And then here I will put e to the I times the integral of phi times d star a. I just took the precise analog of that, right? So I took the thing, this is the exact analog of that, okay? Allow me to... allow me to add a factor of 2, because first of all, it doesn't change for the heuristics, and second, the heuristics didn't bother about constants, and second, in the quadratic form here, I'm kind of skipping the factor of 1/2 that should be in quadratic forms, so, and that's the origin of this 2 here, it's not much, okay? So, now if I want to take the old integral, so I want to take the old integral dA of e to the, what was it, I over 4 pi integral. So, you know what, I don't even want to worry about the pi's. So, a wedge dA, and now I want to, you know, and then there is gamma 1a integral of gamma 2a, but now I want to insert this delta function. So the way I insert the delta function is I add the second integration d phi, and I add this term. Okay, I add this factor, e to the 2i, but the the two e's combine, so I can make it, I can just put it inside here, and I will put it in as 2 phi d star a. Okay? So this is the same integral that I had at the beginning. Okay? But now I want to analyze the new quadratic form. Okay? So what is the new quadratic form? Well, it is the integral over R3 of a wedge dA plus twice phi d star a. So again, the two I've added because I failed to divide the first part by one by two. Okay, so it's again not important. And here is a different way of writing this. So first of all, I suppose this is the integral of a wedge dA plus you know what? Let me make the claim, and then we will expand the claim and see that I haven't lied to you. Okay? So the claim is that this is the inner product of the pair A phi. The pair A phi is living inside omega 1 of R3, direct sum omega 3 of R3, and if you want, you can call it omega odd of R3, or if you want, let me put it on the other side, you can call it omega odd of R3, or if you want, you can call it omega ma. Let me just keep it as omega odd. Omega minus usually stands for something else. And I claim that you take the inner product of this with the following operator applied to A phi. Namely, and this is sort of the operator that defines the quadratic form. So let me call this operator L minus, and it should be given by a matrix of differential operators, right? So the upper left corner should reproduce the ADA part. These two parts should reproduce the phi A part. And here I should have zero because there is no phi phi term in the end. Okay? So what do I get here? I claim that you get star D, D star, D star. Okay? So you just have to check it. Okay? So A inner product star of dA is exactly A wedge dA. Okay? A inner product D of, sorry, in the next one, sorry, let's do this one now. A inner product D of star, no. How do you do matrix multiplication? Sorry, phi inner product D of star A is what is written here. Okay? And then it is half of what is written here. And the other half you get by, again, differentiating by parts, and you'll get the term coming from here. Okay? So the question that remains, well, if I want to do Gaussian integration now, I need to invert L minus. It seems like I haven't achieved much. Okay? But it turns out that the key to inverting L minus is actually a sort of bizarre. You first of all square it. So L minus inverse is in fact L minus times L minus to the negative 2. Or L minus squared inverse. Right? So let's figure out what L minus squared is. So L minus squared is, well, you just do matrix multiplication. So it comes out to be, I don't know how to do matrix multiplication. It should come out to be star D plus God, plus D star, D star, you know, I don't know, you just, sorry, I'll get confused, okay, but it's just matrix multiplication. And if you look at it, this comes out to be the Laplacian here and the Laplacian here. So the square of L minus is the Laplacian. Okay? Now, the Laplacian acting on either one forms or three forms. But when I mean by, what I mean by acting, well, again, we've chosen specific coordinates. So acting on one forms or three forms just means acting on each coordinate individually, each coefficient function individually. Okay? So then the next question is how to invert the Laplacian. Okay? So, well, how do you invert the Laplacian? Well, fortunately, inverting the Laplacian is something that people in harmonic analysis, you know, do, well, they don't do it for breakfast because it's boring. They've done it for breakfast when they were babies. So, what's the inverse of the Laplacian? Well, but you know, we're not in harmonic analysis, we're in physics, so I'm going to give you a physics argument for what the inverse of the Laplacian is. Okay? So, the inverse of the Laplacian is as follows. So, when applied to some function f, and when computed at some point x, it should be some integral kernel, meaning it should be some, you should take the function f, think of it as sort of an infinite vector, okay, an infinite vector of quantities, one quantity for each point. And then you want to multiply it by an infinite matrix. So this is the same as saying that this is the integral of k of xy times f of y dy. I mean, this is, I'm just describing how a matrix acts on a vector. Except it's sort of an infinite vector and an infinite matrix, a continuous vector and a continuous matrix. So the question is, what is this k? Can I find a k that will have this property? Now, k of xy, okay, so first of all, the Laplacian is invariant under translations and under rotations. So if you rotate a function, okay? So basically, since the Laplacian is invariant under translations, the output at x, its dependence on the input on y can only depend on x minus y. And furthermore, because of invariance under rotations, it can only depend on the norm of x minus y, on the distance between x and y. So therefore, this should be some other function k, again I'll call it k, but now it's a one variable function, of the norm of x minus y. Okay? But now, what is this function of x minus y? So, let's do it, in fact, in Rn. Okay? So, in Rn, delta has units, delta of f will depend on what f is, okay? But, if f is measured in degrees, then delta of f will be something times degrees. But what is this something? So to compute the Laplacian, you differentiate twice. differentiating means dividing by a distance between two points. So delta has units meters to the negative 2. Okay? So delta inverse must have units of meter squared, it must multiply the end result by the square of a meter. And but you see, the way it is written, it has here an n-dimensional integral. N-dimensional integration multiplies by meters to the power n. Okay? So, k must have units, must be measured in the units, meters to the power 2 minus n. Right? 2 is the output we want to get, and minus n is to cancel the integration. Okay? Again, mathematicians could rewrite this and say that it's rescaling, that I'm testing how things behave under rescaling. Okay? But, well, I want it to be, well, I want my language, okay, or the physics language, okay? So, but you see, k takes as an input something measured, in R3, this is m to the minus 1. K takes as an input something measured in meters and produces something measured in 1 over meters. There's only one way to do it, take 1 over. Okay? So the conclusion is that K of X and Y must be some constant times 1 over the distance between X and Y. It's the only way you can get from meters to 1 over meters. Now, what is this constant is a matter of explicit computation on one specific function. So you choose your favorite specific function, you do the explicit computations, and it comes out to be 1 over 4 pi, I believe. There are other ways to derive it and understand why it is the volume of the sphere, but, I mean, it's enough for now. Okay? But now we're essentially done. So the moral is that the inverse of L minus is equal to L minus applied to, composed with, convolution with 1 over x, 1 over the distance to a point. Okay? And then it's an explicit computation. I mean, this is a differential operator. You apply it to some explicit formula. You get an explicit formula for the answer, and it comes out to be, the AA part of it. So the right. This is going to look like some 4x4 2x2 matrix, and this part of it will come out to be exactly the same as what we've already derived before. Okay? So, I wish I could give you a homework assignment. And the homework assignment would be to just follow everything. There is nothing exciting happens. You just have to follow it. You just have to trace it. Okay? So, I'm sorry. I hope you forgive me. But I prefer to move on. Oh, maybe that wasn't wise, because now I don't have quite enough time. Okay. Sorry, so I'm going to do two sketchy things. No, but... Well, the next one I will do sketchily, and then next time I will have to do it. The next one is so important that there is no way to... that I will have to do it in great detail later on. Okay. So, okay, my next goal is the following. So later, we will move from integral of e to the I integral of a wedge dA to the so-called Chern-Simons form, which we'll have here, 2/3 times a wedge a wedge a. Okay? And what exactly this means, I don't know yet. I mean, I will have to explain later. Okay? But what I want to do now is to sort of study in the abstract. Suppose you wanted to do perturbed Gaussian integration. So you had some quadratic, sorry, not irrational, just quadratic, and you had some perturbation to the quadratic. How would you integrate? What would you do? Okay? So, so let's do it in Rn. Okay? Just like we did for Gaussian, for the usual quadratic, for Gaussian integration. We first try the Rn case. So what's the Rn analog of this? The Rn analog is the integral in Rn of e to the minus 1/2. So first of all, let me write the general quadratic, lambda ij xi xj, and then add to it the general cubic. So in fact, the fact that I'm adding a cubic is not essential. I could have equally well added a quartic. Sorry, what is degree 4? Quartic. I could have equally well added a quartic, but I just want to keep life relatively simple. The modification will be very simple. Now, let me add 1 over 6, you know, if you want to insist, it's 1 over 3 factorial times lambda I j k x I x j x k, where lambda ijk is some symmetric tensor. It's some symmetric tensor in ij and k, and there is implicit summation over here. And if you don't like the fact that it's divided by 6, well, I mean, you can always just swallow the 6 into the lambda. Okay, it's just, it will make this formula easier if I divide by 6 right here. Okay? And now also, let's pretend that for whatever reason, we can consider this term as being small. Okay? So, I don't know, maybe the lambda ijk has an additional epsilon in it, and we're looking at the, is proportional to some constant epsilon, and we're looking at the behavior of this as epsilon is shrinking to zero. Okay? So, I'm not going to enforce it by putting the epsilon in, I'm just going to pretend that, you know what, why don't I put the epsilon in? Yeah, let's put an epsilon here. So now let's try to figure out what the answer is as a power series in epsilon. Okay? So, first of all, let me write it this way. This is the integral over Rn of, well, I have the exponential of epsilon times something. Epsilon is small. I can use Taylor's theorem. So, sum over m going from 0 to infinity epsilon to the m divided by 6 to the m times m factorial lambda I j k x I x j x k quantity raised to the power m. So I've written the exponential times e to the minus 1/2 lambda ij xi, xj, and all of this is integrated dx. Okay, I've done nothing. Only use Taylor series. Okay? Now, well, this is the integral of a polynomial, at least, you know, as for each epsilon, for each degree in epsilon, this is the coefficient of a, this is the integral of a specific, of some polynomial in the x's times a Gaussian. But we've done this. And the result was that what you do is you take this, the result is you replace this quadratic by the inverse quadratic. So you write e to the 1/2 lambda upper ij ti tj, where ti tj's are variables dual to the xi xj. Okay? And then you, I think in the handout, and for a good reason, I've changed the variables to alpha and beta. Alpha and beta also run from 1 to n. Okay? And then you take this thing and apply to it this polynomial, but where you replace the x's by differentiations with respect to the t's. Okay? So you get some constant times the sum over m goes from 0 to infinity, epsilon to the m divided by 6 to the m factorial, and then lambda ijk di dj dk, where di stands for d to d ti. Okay? And all of this is to be evaluated at t equals 0. Okay? The best way, or one way to do it, is to compute the Taylor expansion of this. Right? I mean, and in fact, the only term in the Taylor of expansion of this that will matter is the term in which the degree in t here will be equal to the number of differentiations. Right? Otherwise, I mean, if the degree in t is too low, you will be differentiating too many times and you'll get zero. If the degree in t is too high, then the substitution t equals zero will kill it. Okay? So this is the same constant c times, and now it's the sum over all choices of m and l, such that the number of differentiations, which is 3m, is equal to the number of t's that you get. The number of t's that you get from the lth term is 2l. So it's the sum over all ways of writing, of solving 3m equals 2l in positive integers. And then what you get is, epsilon to the m divided by 6 to the m factorial, this is copied, right? Times the lth term from here. The lth term from here will have 2 to the l times divided by l factorial, and then I will have the actual thing, so lambda ijk, derivative with respect to I, derivative with respect to j, derivative with respect to k, times, raised to the power, raised to the power m here, and acting on lambda alpha beta, t alpha t beta, raised to the power l. Okay? Again, This seems like a horrible mess, and it is a horrible mess, but unfortunately it's a horrible mess that you have to go through, you know, you have to really understand. Okay? Okay. How do I compute this? So, first of all, here I have summation raised to the power m, so it's I sort of use the distributive law. Okay, so this becomes lambda I one I two, sorry, I one j one k one d I one d I, sorry, d j one d k one times lambda I 2 J 2 K 2 D I D I 2 D J 2 D K 2 three dots up to the nth term. Okay? And I haven't even used the distributive law yet. I've written a power as a product, and then I've used different dummy variables in each summation. Okay. And likewise, this becomes lambda alpha one beta one. T alpha 1 T beta 1 times lambda alpha 2 beta 2 T alpha 2 T beta 2 and so on up to term number L. Okay? And then the next thing, okay. So now I have something that explicitly looks like a very high-order differential operator applied to a very high-order polynomial. Okay? And then we should sort of, remember our proficiency with differentiation, which we gained, which we took calculus, 70 years ago or so. Sorry for saying silly things, but here's the point. The point is, how do you differentiate d acting on t? Okay? In practice, so the way you do it is the first derivative acts on a polynomial on a product, and by Leibniz's rule it ends up acting on only one of the factors. That factor which it acts on, it kills, it eliminates. Okay, and you're remaining with the rest. So the next derivative acts on one of the other factors of the remaining factors and eliminates it. And then the next derivative acts on the one of the remaining factors, and so on. So at the end, this is a sum of pairings. Okay? So I want to see what is the sum of pairings that corresponds to this horrible expression. Okay? So I write this in the following way. First of all, I write it as, it's a constant times this summation over 3m equals 2l times the factors epsilon to the m, m factorial 6 to the m, l factorial 2 to the l. Okay? And then let me write the things that should be paired above one each other instead of to the side of one each other, because it's more convenient. Okay? So here I have L, the L factors that corresponds to the L pairs here. And below, I have let's make another one. Below, I have the M factors that correspond to the differentiation. So really, each of this is a t variable. Each dot here is a t variable, and they go like this. So this is t alpha 1. No, upper alpha. Lower. Alpha 1, sorry. This is t beta 1. This is t alpha 2. This is t beta 2, and so on. Okay? And this one comes with coefficient lambda alpha 1 beta 1. This one comes with coefficient lambda alpha 2 beta 2. And so on. This one will come with coefficient lambda alpha 3 beta 3. Okay? And each of these pitchforks at the bottom is really a third order differential operator with coefficient lambda I1 J1 K1 or lambda I2 J2 K2 and so on. Okay? And on top you have differentiation D I1 D J1 D K1 D I2 D J2 D K2 and so on. Okay? So what is the result? So each of the differentiators, each of the derivatives must kill one of the t's. In other words, it's a sum of pairings. So overall, we have to look over inside here, we have to look at the sum over all pairings. But what does a pairing look like? So a pairing will look like this connects to this, this connects to this, this connects to this, and so on. Okay? Now, each time you connect two things, so what is the derivative with respect to I in the direction of I1 of t alpha 2? The answer is, well, you either the two variables match or they don't match. If they match, you get 1, otherwise you get 0. So this is delta I1 times alpha 2. Okay? So the moral is that the result is a constant. Sorry, this is not implied. This is still equal. Okay? The result is the same summation, constant, times the same summation over 3m equals 2l of epsilon to the m divided by 6 to the m, m factorial, 2 to the l, l factorial, times, well, a sum over all, but you see, if I want to recover the expression, so the product of lambdas with two indices and lambdas with three indices, from what is written here, I mean, it's enough to know the combinatorics. It's enough to know what is the diagram written here. Okay? So it's a sum over diagrams D of, for each diagram, you get some expression corresponding to the diagram. And you can read off the diagram, sorry, the expression from the diagram. Okay? But then there is a messy combinatorial thing, which is that each diagram occurs many times could occur from many different pairings. Okay? So there is some combinatorial factor here, C times D, C of D, which is how many times the diagram D arises from pairings like this. And I'm out of time. But the result will be that C of D will cancel these messy combinatorial factors, and you will be left with 1 over the order of the automorphism group of the diagram. Sorry, I was... Okay, well, let's stop. Okay?